Yes, hello, welcome back. And do our guests feel good about the state of the city? We're about to find out. James Brown felt good about something else. See what our guests think. In studio with me is Ralph Moore, coordinator for mentoring of an ex-Fender Mentoring Academy and Training Center, and longtime community activist, peace activities, civil rights activities, working in our communities in the inner city and education for most of his life, is in studio with us. We're joined by phone. Our other three guests, Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show, right here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, every Thursday night at 7 p.m., my longtime friend and partner on the phone with us. On the phone with us also Kim Trueheart, a longtime citizen activist, joining us by phone from Camp 83, where people are being evicted now and sent somewhere else. She was going to be in studio, but she's there with the people in the camp, so she's joining us by phone. And Tyrone Keyes, author, public affairs strategist, and public relations expert, is joining us by phone as well. So Tyrone, Ralph, Kim, and Anthony, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I wish I was there.
Me too, but you know, you have another job and you had to be at your office, which is fine. You're here. That's what counts. 410-319-8888 is our number to call in. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. Write to us by email at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages, but just call if you can. 410-319-8888 is the number here to call. So where do we begin? There's so much to talk about. Let me just talk about first the one piece that I've been following, many of us have been following, this plastic bag controversy in City Hall. We're going to try to get to that, body cameras, the state of education, and all this brouhaha going on now about where city schools are, which I want to spend a great deal of time on with the four of you this morning. But starting out with plastic bags, I mean, first of all, they're going to put this 5-cent a bag tax on plastic bags. And from what I read it, you can describe what you think. I thought that original bill was fairly onerous on the people who own businesses, another pile of papers to report, another bureaucratic mess and morass for people to go through, which people, I think, voted against in this last election in many ways. The banning seemed to make maybe more sense to just ban plastic bags, but the way it was done can be called into question. So what do we all think? Let me start with Kim Trueheart. Kim?
Hey, Mark. Hey. I was at the hearing last week where the bill was discussed in committee, and there was never any discussion last week about banning it. It was all related to the 5 cents and the portion of the 5 cents that would go to the store owners to offset their expense. And that was, I think, a penny and a half was going to go to each store owner out of the 5 cents. And then all of a sudden, when it got to the floor Monday night, our council president amended the bill and completely banned it, and that just shocked everybody. And they're saying that was in response to the election. The issue is that the industry wasn't ready for this. I, from an environmental standpoint, think it's probably the best thing. But did we gradually move there? That's the question. And how did we just all of a sudden arrive here? One of the things that the environmentalists are saying is that maybe we need to educate the public better about the harmful impact of having these bags in our society throughout the communities and the harm it does. And then educate folks on how to eliminate them and get into more reusable options.
You know, when I look at this process and the process of awarding certain contracts and the process of how we select new council people who represent districts, and all the rest, I really, Ralph Moore, and then we'll go to Anthony McCarthy and Tyrone, I really think citizens have a right to call into question the process. Whether you agree with banning bags or not, it's the process that frustrates a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I wish we would have a better process and more full participation and all that, but it doesn't bother me so much. I think the reality is that people resist change, even when it's good for them. Our first reaction is to resist it. And I think we ought to be very pleased with the behavior modification that occurred a few years ago when we started doing recycling in the city, which was going to take a little bit more effort, you know, to separate your stuff and to put two different containers out on the street in the alley on two separate days. That was a change, but people came around and they did it. And I'm thinking about the kids and the grandkids. I got an 8-year-old granddaughter. I'm concerned about the future for them in terms of the environment. And these bags are oil-based products, right? We're already using too much oil. So the sooner we can get to this, to me, the better. Now, I'll confess that we used to have the children in our peace camp make flowers out of these plastic bags. And with a little note, we'd hand them out to the public down at the Inner Harbor and when we'd go sing peace songs at the White House. But we were already 3-4 years ago teaching the children to try to teach the adults about the overuse of plastic bags. And I just think people can be conditioned, can be programmed, can be taught, however you want to put it, to return to the car to get their reusable bags with signs at the front door of the supermarket, with signs at the place where the carts are stored, with the workers telling people, don't forget your plastic bags, who are going out there to retrieve carts and sweep up. But we can do some things to educate the public fairly quickly on this stuff.
Anthony?
I disagree with Ralph, and that's very, very unusual. I think that the process is flawed. And I think it goes against all of our calls and understanding of transparency when it comes to this city council. As Kim educated us, there was a conversation about this fee, which I am completely opposed to, this 5-cent plastic bag fee. In one council cycle, they turned it into a council ban. Now, I will tell you, I agree with Ralph on the fact that we can move fairly quickly to educate people, but you can't do it immediately. The immediacy of this is troubling. And I understand that these bags are problematic. I remember being part of an administration that wanted to lessen the use of these plastic bags at City Hall, but it has to be a process. I know why they moved away from the 5-cent fee. They actually heard the loud message from voters in the city of Baltimore and across the state of Maryland, stop feeing and taxing us to death. But I talked to two older women in the grocery store at Safeway the other day after hearing this, and they were outraged. And now, I think we can educate them, like Ralph said, and move the process along, but they are getting on a bus with 5 or 6 bags that are easy for them to carry. But if you move to either requiring people to buy their own bag or paper bags, it becomes an inconvenience to citizens. Now, we can educate them, we can move them along and move towards a ban. It cannot be done immediately. I think it's ramming this change down people's throat. Change is difficult, but let's do it where the citizens are taken into consideration.
Just a quick question, Anthony. How do paper bags inconvenience citizens? I think of my grandmother who walked up from downtown every day with a couple of paper shopping bags that had the kind of rope-like handles to them. She never saw a plastic bag, I don't think.
I remember my grandfather marching uphill in snow to get to school as well before buses were available. But if you have to carry 4 or 5 bags and you're getting on the bus, it is difficult, much more difficult than these very convenient handled plastic bags. And I think we can educate people. We can make and get rid of these fees where people have to pay to get a canvas bag or a whole lot of other things. But it's got to be a process.
So jump in, Tyrone.
All right. Well, I do agree with the gentleman with regard to change being difficult. You know, I, for one, do have an issue. When you drive past a wooded area and you see a lot of the discarded blue and white plastic bags, they're all hung up in the trees. And if they're petroleum-based, then that's definitely an issue where biodegradability is concerned. However, I do not think the government should be in the business of, I believe it, the gentleman's name is Ralph. Ralph suggested re-education, conditioning, and programming. Sounds very Orwellian to me. I would prefer that, as Ms. Trueheart said, the government get out there and educate people as to alternatives and also work with industry, because there are alternatives to petroleum-based plastic bags, including cornstarch-based plastic bags, which, of course, would break down in a much more environmentally friendly way. Now, at the end of the day, do I think that this is going to cause some very temporary wringing of hands and gnashing of teeth in terms of not having that type of bag available? But I think that looking at the way the legislative body down there, the city council, does these types of things is what we should be paying the most attention to, because this ban just, you know, materialized out of nowhere, as everyone said.
Well, I want to jump in some things here, and I think that this plastic bag thing is interesting. I want to come back to it next week, and I think the process is important. And personally, I agree with you, Anthony, from the very beginning. I just really thought that the regulations on small businesses and the tax was absurd. I mean, when I read what the businesses had to do to comply every 25 days, turning in a report on how many bags were let out, I mean, I think just if you run a small business, you don't need another layer of headache to get through the day.
Right.
And I think that's absurd. But the banning makes sense to me because we're killing the environment.
Right.
I mean, and
that's happening now.
Right. And part of that is – and part of the pressure here is some very powerful former city and state employees – who have a consulting firm that represents the plastic industry that can get in the inside and make their argument.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot here that's very complex about all that. But I think that the process just didn't make any sense. I mean,
but there's a part of me that's...
There should be another hearing to say ban them.
There's a part of me that's frustrated that and I think a lot of people out there in radio land feel this way too, that the government isn't working very much. It's not doing very much. And so,
or very well.
Right. What they're doing is not necessarily so very well, being done so very well. And so I believe in process. I believe in hands above the table, all of that stuff. But I'm also frustrated by the fact that it feels like at various levels of government that little to nothing gets done. And there is a certain urgency in terms of the environment. And again, I think of my granddaughter, children, whatever, everybody's kids in terms of this stuff.
Mark, can I add something very quick?
Okay. Anthony, then Kim, go.
I agree. I don't want our listeners to miss what you said. The process right now is they're voting on the ban next week. I think that there has to be a public hearing and allow the citizens to voice their concerns and let the process move. If we move towards banning, fine. I would believe in giving some folks some options, educate about the options, moving towards, as we all know, transparency. And I love what Ralph said about hands on the table, that we're moving towards banning these plastic bags. But let the citizens' voices be heard. This is not some authoritarian body at the city council that can change something one week and approve it the next week. There has to be some sort of process that takes the citizens into consideration.
Kim, what were you going to say? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. The mayor has threatened to veto this bill. And so what we have is our legislative and executive branches at odds on this process. And the process definitely is broken. As an observer of it up close every week, I see that our government isn't working and cooperating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we can be a whole lot smarter about how to protect the environment. And this is just, as Anthony said, you know, this heavy-handed approach that didn't allow the citizens to participate in the conversation. I think we need to take a step back. I think our legislature, the council, needs to really adjust and recognize that public input is important to all of these processes.
So, I think that this all is kind of a critically important component to this, and I think that there's a lot in the leadership that has to be kind of addressed and in all of this. And I do want to kind of switch some gears. It's not the city council necessarily, and a little bit I want to hear what Kim Trueheart can tell us about what's happening at Camp 83 since she's on the spot. But there's been so much controversy around what's going on in our city schools right now. The question of why no money or very little money is coming from the casinos and they're making all this money in Baltimore City. The question of closing six more schools so we can fit into some guidelines to allow the $1.1 billion of rehab money coming in. The convocation taking place, the meeting taking place this weekend with our state legislators and the CEO of the schools. The report that just came out about our schools and this Fund for Excellence, which is actually run by people who are doing a lot to privatize schools around the country. and that not being kind of talked about in terms of all this. I think there's a lot here that we're at a really pivotal point. I think many of us in the city don't really have a sense yet of what this new CEO is like and what he stands for. And I read all this stuff coming through. And Anthony, you've been in this business a long time too. And I read all these articles this morning and read this piece of this report. I'm going, I feel like I'm reliving shows I produced in 1993.
Yeah, sure. It's deja vu all over again.
Right. I'm just really very frustrated about what's going on with our children in these schools.
Well, do you want Anthony?
Go ahead, Ralph, and we'll jump into the phone.
Yeah, it is great concern. First of all, in terms of the number of buildings that will be available for the children in the future, the population, the student body in the school system has been steadily going down. It wasn't that long ago. We had like 110,000 kids in the school system. Now we're down to about 80-some thousand. So we don't have a need for all the buildings that we did have previously. On the other hand, we are concerned that the number of buildings that were going to be affected by the $1.1 billion has been shrinking too. It was up in around 60-some. I think now it may be down into the high 20s or something like that. These are schools that will be either renovated or rebuilt. But they seem the money will apparently impact fewer school buildings, and that's a concern as to why that's happening. And the money ought to build these schools and make them the nicest possible facilities they can for these kids and for the community to have access to meeting space and all that kind of thing. In terms of what's happening in the schools, I think you're right, Mark, that it is deja vu all over again. We're hearing the same stuff. We keep thinking that we get a new CEO in, what used to be the superintendent, and everything's going to be fixed right. And everything's going to be changed. And you want to talk about engagement in the process. Yes, parents need to be engaged in the process, and community people and businesses need to be engaged in the process in terms of the school system.
We have to take a very brief break, and I'll come right back and jump right into 410-319-8888. It's your kids' schools. What do you think? And what's going on in the city around that? I really want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. We'll come right back to our guests on the phone, jumping right into this. And let me leave you this thought as we go out, just for this very quick break. Sometimes I feel like an abolitionist in the 1850s, where people want to make compromises about the end of slavery. I'm getting a little tired of compromises when it comes to our children's future.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that when we come back.
Yeah.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it? Kick it. Can I kick it? Can I kick it?
This is Mark Steiner, and we went out at the break with I Kick It by Tribe Called Quest. They reunited on this day in 2004, and coming back in here, Seesaw by Idris Muhammad, who was born on this day in 1939. And here we are with Ralph Moore, Kim Trueheart, Tyrone Keyes, and Anthony McCarthy. And we're going to get these two calls coming in, but let me get to my guests. So Barry and Carparetti, if I had that right, I hope, we're going to come right to your calls. But let's comment on this kind of thing. I mean, I think that, Anthony, I mean, the school thing is frustrating. We were saying during the break, I've met this new CEO once. He really sounds like a really lovely man when I met him, just a very pleasant human being. But I honestly have to say, and I look forward to talking to him in the air, maybe you have already, I'm not sure what the agenda is. What does it stand for? I knew with Alonso where he stood, even if you disagreed with some of the stuff that Andres Alonso did, you knew he was a presence and he had an idea. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I have to tell you, I understand it was a part of the conversations when the most recent, not this one, but the previous downsizing conversation took place. And I was impressed by Alonso's outreach to the communities. Even the conversations about what would happen to these buildings of the schools that were targeted to close down. Politics took over that conversation and it became an absolute mess. The reality is we have a downsized student population. We have to do something. And huge influx of dollars are about to come into the city. Not managed by the city, by the way, managed by the state. But we have to have this conversation. The piece that's missing and the piece that's frustrating is that I did meet the CEO. I found him to be so engaging, mm-hmm. so energizing, but I also recognize that his hands are tied by the politics. Everyone says that our children are the number one priority. But, Mark, have you heard a single member of the legislature, have you heard a single member of the council address this in the week that we've known about these announcements? I don't think it's a priority. I think that what we have to do is the citizens have to demand answers. Closing schools may sound simple, but what is going to happen to these buildings? And it's not just about six schools. 27 schools are going to be affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
Downsizing, students are going to be moved, shuffled. We can't allow this to turn into the mess that it became last time. We need leadership from this school board. There are so many people missing from this that I get frustrated that we on the radio and activists like Kim and Ralph and Tyrone, we have to ask these questions when it should be the other way around. They should be providing us with the answers.
Well, Anthony's absolutely right. I also think that part of the equation that needs to be considered is not just the quantity of facilities, but the quality of the education, and is it fit for the 21st century long run? One of the reasons why I couldn't join you in studio is because I'm out here with the State Department of Education at a career and technology forum up here in Timonium. And there are several employers here, several high technology universities here, and they're all talking about the fact that Baltimore City needs to have its students prepared to take advantage of what this economy is becoming. It's similar to the shift from the agrarian society that the country once was into the industrial age. Now we're switching from industrial to information. And if these kids don't know math, they don't know science, then they're going to be hamstrung. So the quality of education needs to be discussed, and the parents need to also understand this so that they can help guide their children into a productive 21st century.
Mark,
Kim, go ahead, then I'll open the phones after this.
Yeah, one of the things I think that's important to understand is that when the initial assessment was done in terms of right-sizing the school system,
uh-huh.
It was done by a company in Northern Virginia that came in. And there was very little input from the neighborhoods that we know in Baltimore are very protective of what they have. And so what we have here is this outside assessment of what needs to happen with our buildings in our neighborhoods. And everybody is now revolting when they hear that their neighborhood school is going to be one that's going to be closed. And I think that to reset this conversation, I think we have to engage the neighborhoods. This is about making Baltimore a livable city where folks feel welcome, where they feel that their children are going to be taken care of and nurtured, and the neighborhoods have been left out of this conversation all too often. And so what we see now is this revolt that's going on. We need to right-size the school system. There's no question about that. And the school board has said that we need to have an 85% utilization rate of the facilities, and we're nowhere near that. So that, as Anthony said, we're going to have to close about 27 schools across the city. The question is, which schools are they going to be? And why didn't we get an opportunity to participate? Mm-hmm. And right now, those kinds of conversations are happening, but they're not happening sufficiently
That
people are comfortable with
them. So, very quickly, I do want to get to the phones here.
Very quickly, part of the conversation has to be, how is this going to impact me? That the community, the folks in the neighborhoods where those schools are, need to be able to hear and understand, well, mm-hmm. if you're closing this school, where are my children supposed to go, and how will they get there? And I remember some years ago when I was on Carl Stokes' education committee and Amprey was, God rest his soul, was reorganizing the schools.
Right. Also Amprey.
We charted out what that would mean throughout the system, and we showed it to him. And he was surprised what that meant in terms of where kids would have to travel and how they'd have to get there and all that kind of thing. So maybe we in the community need to come together and do that kind of thing again. Maybe they're not totally clear of what kind of impact they're having on people. And it shouldn't be a Herculean effort for kids to get to school,
right,
and to get to crappy buildings. We owe more to the children than that.
Yeah, we'll come back to this, and I probably have a longer roundtable on this with some of you on it as well, just to come back and talk about this in the next week, because we want to focus a lot in the next couple of weeks on some shows in education, because I think it's critical. But let me go to the phones, as I promised my listeners, at 410-319-8888. Barry in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, dear guest. I have two kids, one that's in Weston High School now, and the other one just graduated from Weston last year.
Congratulations.
Yeah. The challenge is Alonzo had aligned the system so much to the middle of the pack of kids that a lot of Poly Weston City, a lot of those schools no longer offer some of the more challenging courses. So your higher level math, they may offer one class versus calculus and physics two. So we had to augment their education by going outside of the school system just to be able to keep up. And the question I think ought to be not only on quality, but it is a known fact that Baltimore City Public School students do worse on a standardized test than everybody else. Now, I know there's cultural issues and things like that, but if you go to one of the best schools and you still are not getting the score that everybody else in Baltimore County and Arundel County is getting, then the question needs to be asked, what are they missing?
That is a question that has to be asked, and you know, I think that I was thinking about we've done some shows very recently on schools, and there are examples of schools across the country and in the city even that are really working.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and we're not taking advantage of that knowledge about how to create these schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who can vote with their feet, who have the money to put their kids in private schools in the city and pay $27,000 tuitions for the kids to go to the first grade.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They have schools that have options.
Right.
Right?
Mark, that's all a function of the leadership. If you have a great principal who is very concerned about the academics and the students in that population that he serves, you're going to have great outcomes for our children. And the autonomy that has been given to the principals in Baltimore City shows exactly what you're saying. Those principals that get it are producing great results for the children. The curriculums are great. We don't have an approved curriculum in Baltimore City that has been approved by the school board. So the dumbed-down curriculum that many of our children are receiving is because the leaders are lazy and don't want to get off their butts. And I'm sorry to say that, but we've got some principals that don't need to be in those schools managing them because they don't know how to inspire teachers to produce great outcomes for our children.
And I would add to that we probably need to see more parental involvement and parents banding together to lobby either an exit for these types of principals who are lethargic or
absolutely
enhancement in the curriculum.
Absolutely. You get to pick as a parent, you get to vote on whether that is the right leader for your school or not. And if you're not there and you're not involved, then shame on you because you get the dumbed down curriculum.
Let me go back to the phones here, if I might. 410-319-8888. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. It says Caporetti.
This is Caprice.
Caprice. I says Caporetti on my screen. But Caprice, thanks so much. That's
Caprice,
much easier to say than Caporetti.
Caporetti, that's a new one. I get a lot of things, but that's fresh. Well, great panel. Eloquent, compassionate, knowledgeable. I really appreciate you guys. And my comment is regarding plastic and education.
Okay.
I have an observation and I have an idea. Now, there is a mass of plastic the size of this country, America, floating around as a puddle of, like, melted down plastic in the Pacific.
Correct.
And it's just getting larger and larger, and no one's taking responsibility. So from the time the plastic is manufactured and then it's utilized as a convenience, and which is offered by, you know, the companies and corps, and then that's it. It falls off. That's why you see it hanging in trees and hanging everywhere and, you know, choking up the birds and whatever else. So my thing is, you can say that all these schools are closing. That means that, you know, we're living in this new millennium, and there's voids that need to be filled. And I think that one of them is a full-fledged recycling system that would educate, that would employ people there could be, you know, that would employ people and at the same time, you know, make that cycle complete so that it's recycled and goes back to where it's made. And then it starts all over again. I think that we would really do a great service to this planet by doing that. We would offer people jobs and create a new industry whose time is now in this new millennium. That's my contribution to this morning's conversation. I look very forward to hearing your response.
Thank you, Caprice. Well, you see, I can only see Ralph here. He's nodding his head. So let me go to Ralph real fast.
Well, I think you're right, and I think that's what some of us are trying to say, that there's an immediate problem now. It's a really serious problem in terms of the environment now. So I've differed with many of the other panel members, but I think the sooner we take action, the better. I respect process. I've never been accused of being Orwellian before this show tonight, but that's all right, before today. But that's all right. I understand that. But just understand my frustration that we've got a big problem. We've got a future that we have to save, and the sooner we can get to some of this stuff, the better, I think.
Anthony?
Yeah. You know, let me add to that. Since I am guilty of throwing the Orwellian charge out there, I do agree with Ralph that, you know, we have jumped ahead in terms of our technology over our intellectual maturity in a lot of instances. And I think that our disposable society is one example of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do definitely agree with the caller and with Ralph that we do need to come up with some really assertive solutions,
right,
to putting a real recycling effort out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we see right now is kind of token, you know, it feels good. But we need to put a real recycling effort out there that will, you know, allow us to have these containers and whatnot, but at the same time, take it out of being so detrimental to the environment.
So
Mark, yesterday there was a hearing at the city council on renewable energy and what Baltimore City government was going to do. And one of the key aspects, and I testified, I said, what about jobs? We have to use this opportunity.
Right.
And we've got funding in the city as a result of the Constellation BGE merger, about 50-some million dollars that will go directly to help low-income folks with their energy.
Mm-hmm.
But that can produce job opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about solar energy and how that could be community-based and neighborhood-based. But it's also a function of educating folks,
mm-hmm,
getting them trained for these new kinds of jobs in the green industries. And that conversation really needs to get pushed. We just can't spend this money that we've got and not get anything out of it.
Anthony, on the way to the phones, what do you have to say?
Thanks. And it's not rocket science. Best practices around the country, there are cities that are doing this, that are employing people and doing it right. I just need for the leaders of our city not to seem so dumbfounded and perplexed by these. We have to find solutions to these modern-day difficulties, and they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that the mayor, you would think the council president, you would think the members of the council would need Kim Trueheart to be there every day to educate them, but thank God she is. But I get frustrated that people are getting paid to find solutions, and they're standing there looking like someone just stole their lollipop. They cannot get it right. I'm frustrated by leadership, the vacuum of leadership in the city of Baltimore.
Well, it's everywhere. You know, it's government
just
has become politics.
It's
no,
Ralph,
I'm not excusing it. I'm not excusing it. But
the fact that the people in our city who want more people to move to this city, who want to find a way to lower property taxes, can't get the most simple and basic things right, like a recycling program that's been instituted in our city for over a decade. Let's get it right.
Yeah, vacuum is a great word, Anthony. That we have a vacuum of leadership. Yeah. Yeah.
Let me get back to the phones here, because this is a very intense and good conversation the four of you are having. I appreciate it very deeply. 410-319-8888. I can see this commentary panel could become a common thing here on the show. You guys are great. 410-319-8888. Bill Ferguson, I think our state senator, on the air. Welcome.
Hello there, Mark.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hey there, very well. Well, first off, I think Anthony did steal my lollipop. In all seriousness, I think that this is a critically, critically important conversation, and I wanted to sort of hone in on the education piece. And, you know, it comes with recycling, and it comes with, you know, all of our major problems that we face in Baltimore, is that we just simply have to think bigger and have to sort of break down our common conceptions of what we've done in the past and just tinkering around the edges. I recently had a chance to visit Hartford, Connecticut, and they've set up a program. It came through a lawsuit, which is a challenge to get through legislatively, about increasing socioeconomic diversity of school enrollment by breaking down the barriers between the Hartford city and the county surrounding. When you look at the opportunity, when you look at lots of research out there, we know that socioeconomically diverse schools are better for students with low income and students who come from families of high income.
Right.
And yet this is something that's seen as not being possible to have a conversation about. You know, I think now is the moment in this sort of, in this mix of political uncertainty to say, what are the solutions that will work for kids and families and build on that?
I think, Bill, that's important. And the question is, how do you get there? Right. I mean, it's always, and we've heard this before, and I think that the whole question, this has been an argument we've been having in the United States of America ever since school segregation was made illegal, and we've been trying to create a diverse school body economically and racially, but it hasn't happened. And we also haven't created a school system where that does happen, where people really understand the special needs because of the economic conditions and racism in America of young black children, especially coming from the inner city. And so we haven't dealt with that. There are a few schools that are very focused on a curriculum, like the School for the Arts, that has a diverse population economically and racially. But that's a rarity. That hardly ever happens.
Yes,
I think it's a function of education.
Go ahead, Kim.
Everybody. And until everybody is equal in terms of their understanding and knowledge and awareness, you know, you have these big gaps where people can't socially interact with each other because they can't even communicate with each other. You know, we've got to teach everybody on the same level. And, you know, I'm a supporter of the Common Core Standards because that informs us to the degree that every little black child in Baltimore City is going to be taught the very same things the folks in Montgomery County and Prince George's County or wherever. We're not going to have just this dumbed-down curriculum in Baltimore any longer. And once people are able to go get jobs and take care of themselves and take care of the environment and their neighborhoods, you know, then we can talk about equality. But we're so unequal right now in terms of our knowledge and awareness.
Let me go back to the phones here, unless anybody really wants to jump in very quickly and critically. Let me see what our listeners are thinking. It's also about school comment at 410-319-8888. And Pam, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi,
Pam.
Love your show, and you have great topics today.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to know where all the toll money goes. How come some of the toll money that's collected does not, you know, a certain percentage go towards our schools?
You said toll, T-O-L-L?
Yes, toll.
Toll, okay. Uh-huh.
Bridges, tunnels.
Right. Well, I think, unless I'm wrong about this, Anthony Tyrone, is that that was one of the referendums on the ballot, which was to make a lockbox out of transportation funding. We can agree or disagree with that.
Right.
But that toll money is supposed to go into the transportation fund,
right,
to keep roads,
mm-hmm,
bridges,
right,
and rail.
That's right. That's right. That was question one on the ballot, and it did pass.
Right.
Maybe the young lady is onto something with regard to having a similar ballot initiative for education. So if you come out and you say, oh yeah, we're going to build these casinos and all of the money is,
right,
going to go to education, maybe we can have a ballot initiative that, like question one did for transportation, do a similar thing for education.
I mean, that makes sense. I was kind of really, myself, Anthony, really horrified when I started reading the emails people were sending me, that how little of the casino money is actually going to education.
Without a doubt. And I think that people need to stop and think about the questions they asked during this casino process. It was so much fever. I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but it was so much
fervor.
Pomp and pageant. Fervor, thank
fervor,
you.
Fervor.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I have you. There was so much excitement by our legislators, by the public, by people, but they didn't ask the critical questions, or we didn't delve into the answers. Mark, I met with about 12 principals over the last 2 weeks, and almost every principal told me that they were promised, and people think, oh, they have autonomy. They were promised a certain number for each student. They're getting barely those dollars. We have real serious problems in the public schools of the city of Baltimore that they're glossing over with all of this talk in I've said enough. But
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that we have, like you said, this really harkens back to segregation. It harkens back to the abolition of slavery. And people say Common Core, as Kim said. The problem with Common Core to me is that our school system is broken and that not all children are going to get an equal exposure to Common Core. And so it is a failure that we can't educate all of our children the same way, at the same level, and with the same quality in 2014.
And I have to wait. I will go back to my mantra over the last bunch of years in this program, which is I keep going back to the private school system in Baltimore City, which is one of the best private school systems in the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
A diverse system that allows people to choose a radical methods that seem to work, like Waldorf or Montessori, or you pick progressive schools like Park or more established schools like Friends or an all-boys school like Gilman's or an all-girls school like Roland Park, whatever you want, or Loyola. I mean, there's so many choices people have. Public school students, to me, deserve that kind
of
choice.
Absolutely.
Because a core curriculum is what education is about: knowledge and creativity and creative thinking and giving people a knowledge base. People say, why do you study algebra? You'll never use it again, but you don't know. You do use it every day in your brain because it makes your brain function a certain way, makes you think.
Right.
And we're not doing that for our children, and that is the crime, which is why so many people flee the city school system.
Right. And it should allow you to be able to move through the system. You know, some parents move their kids from one side of town to the next, and there should be some guarantee that they're going to get the stuff that they need wherever they are.
And what happens is, like, this woman just went to jail for 6 years in Cleveland because she lied about where she lived because she was homeless to make sure her kid could get into a better school.
And
put her in jail. No,
and there's been a lot of lying for years, and I don't blame people for lying. I'm sorry.
So before we have to run, Kim, I have to ask you a quick question. We have some time, but I wanted to get this before we go. You are now down at Camp 83, right?
Yes, I am.
So tell us what's going on, and describe to our listeners why you're there and what's happening. I just wanted them to get a sense, which is why you couldn't come to the studio today, because you had to go there. Why?
Yeah, the mayor's Office of Human Services has initiated a new process where along Guilford Avenue, and I'm at the corner of Eager and Guilford, is the first encampment under the I-83 overpass, that they are actually going to implement this new strategy of cleaning physically the grounds under the expressway. And there just happened to be homeless people on the grounds under the expressway, which means as you clean, you're going to impact them. So the other part of what they need to do is find homes for these people or get them off the street. So on Monday was the first iteration of this cleaning. They identified the fact that there are over a dozen people under this one section at Eager and Guilford, and that they have now connected these people, 13 of them today, to outreach workers, to services, to providers who are going to get them off the street. They just sent a bunch of them to a hotel where they're going to get supposedly case management. Some of them have drug addiction, some have mental health issues. So these people are going to be connected, hopefully, to the services and programs that they need. So this is the first iteration this week. They will be cleaning these spaces on Mondays and Thursdays.
I can only hope that really happens for the folks that are being moved out. I mean, so many people I know who I've met and interviewed who are homeless prefer to live under bridges and the miserable conditions that exist in a lot of the so-called shelters for homeless people in the city.
It's not going to be easy because they're learning as they go along here. I was here Monday morning at 9:30 and everything was supposed to kick off at 10, and it's a learning opportunity for the mayor's office, for the outreach workers, and for us activists as well. You know,
Kim,
we get this right?
We're just about running out of time. I do want to thank all of you. You just heard Kim Trueheart, Longtime activist joining us by phone from Camp 83. My old dear friend and colleague, Anthony McCarthy, not old in age, but old in wisdom and other things, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here in WEAA every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Thank you, brother, for being with us
again. Thank you, Mark.
My good friend Tyrone Keyes, author, public affairs strategist, and public relations expert, who's very happy about the gubernatorial election. Good to have you with us, Tyrone.
Thank you, Mark.
Always good to have you with us. And Ralph Moore, also an old friend, coordinator of the mentoring and at an ex-offender mentoring academy and training center, but who has spent years working with our children and as a community activist and peace activist in our community. Thank the four of you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are preempted in our second hour. We found out that the station is going to carry the convocation here at Morgan State University with my old friend Juan Williams, who is speaking. So that will be taking place instead of 11 o'clock hour. I apologize to our 11 a.m. guests. Reminding on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. And we're leaving you with All Things You Are by the great Hampton Hawes, was born on this day in 1928. Thank you very much for being with us.